Hey, cop, watch it!
How fast are you going?
I can't tell, the speedometer is melting.
Pull over.
Top of the morning, officer.
Hi.
Is there something I can help you with?
You have any idea how fast you were going?
Well, funnily enough, I was just talking to my friend about that. Our speedometer's melted, and as a result, it's very hard to say with any degree of accuracy exactly how fast we were going.
78 miles an hour.
78, huh? Well, yeah, I could buy that. Sure, I guess. You would know better than us, especially since we got a melted speedometer.
Do you feel this vehicle is safe for highway travel?
Yes, I do. Yes, I really do. I believe that. I know it's not pretty to look at, but it'll get you where you want to go.
Now, you got no outside mirror.
No, we lost that.
You have no functioning gauges.
No, not a one. However, the radio still works. Funny as that may seem, with all this mess, that the radio is the only thing that's really working good, and it's as clear as a bell. Don't ask me how.
The old classic, Planes, Trains, Automobiles. In that movie, two guys find out what happens when life doesn't go according to plan. So grab your notes. It's the big idea this weekend. You can jot it in. Life doesn't always go according to plan. And, I saw a movie recently as one of those thrillers, action-type movies. And I was noticing those when something bad is going to happen, the music changes a little bit or they change the angle of the camera to sort of get you ready so it's not a total shock. Something bad is going to happen. Brace myself. And I thought, I wish life was like that. That you sort of got a heads up, you know, something difficult's going to happen. It won't be long. Get yourself ready because something's going to happen and it's going to change everything. It's going to mean that plan A is not working anymore. If you come today, welcome. I'm Robin. This is East Lake Church. If you came for out of Compton, then you're in the wrong place. This is East Lake Church. And this is a church for everyone. This is a tell your friends and family. This is a come as you are place. Everybody can come here. Explore what it is to find out how much Jesus loves you. And the big idea this weekend is life doesn't always go according to plan. That's the reality. Look in your notes. Let me read you part of the Bible. Bad things don't come up from the dirt. Trouble does not grow from the ground. But people are born to have trouble, as they surely as the sparks rise from a fire. If I were you, I would turn to God and tell him about my problems. In other words, life doesn't always go according to plan. When I'm on plan B, how does God get in the middle of that? The first marriage didn't work. I'm on the second marriage. And I had a huge blowout with one of the kids when I prepared myself to have the talk, and it didn't go like I wanted to. I'm not in the career I thought I would get. I'm in a different career. It doesn't look like the career that I went to school for. We kind of know this is the plan A that I want to do in life, and then if we end up in plan B, how does God get in the middle of that? Can he make it as good as plan A? Where do I find hope in the middle of plan B? And there's lots of people in the Bible that had to find hope when they were working plan B. And one of them is this great character, David. If you've been to church any length of time, you've heard his story. Or even if you're not religious, you haven't been to church, we've all heard of David and Goliath. You know, even in sports, they'll use the analogy. It's a David and Goliath. You know, the small, weak one somehow overtakes the large, strong one. But David had a way bigger story than just the time he fought a giant. He's a person that really understood what it was to go through life and have his plans not work out like he wanted to. So if you've heard the story before, I hope you can catch some fresh insights. And if you've never heard it before, let me give you some backdrop. David is an Israelite. He lives in Bethlehem. He comes from a very normal family. He's just a normal guy. And his family isn't one of the elite in the community. And they run a little business. They tend sheep. They're just sort of moving through life, average every day. You know, Joe Bloke guys, and David's a part of this family, and he probably has plans for his life. I'm just going to be a regular guy, get a regular job, and meet a girl, and have some kids, and that's my life. I'm going that direction. And then one day, everything changes in his life when the leader of Israel, the spiritual leader Samuel, shows up at his house unannounced, and he comes into the living room, and he looks at everybody in the family, and he looks at David and he says, David, God told me to come here and tell you that you're going to be the next king of Israel. imagine a plan change. I'm sure it seems shocking to everyone. They're like, oh, yeah, right. I mean, has anybody ever told you anything? And when they told it to you, it sounded so fantastic. You're like, not a chance. One in a million, not even one in a million chance. But you still noticed that a little spark of hope occurred. Anything, everything told you, no way, not in a million years is that ever going to happen for me. And yet, even though it seemed impossible, there was a little spark of hope. Just a small spark began. You wanted it to happen, even though you thought there's no way it could happen. You're going to be king someday. Imagine in your family if the President of the United States, Barack Obama, walked in, gathered everybody together, and pointed to your teenager and said, you're going to be the next president. You're like, ha, kid doesn't even get up to go to school on time. David was not king material. He was the youngest in his family. And besides, Israel has a king, hello, named Saul. And he has a son named Jonathan, who everyone knows is going to be the next king. So it's the craziest dream you've ever had. It's a thing you thought would never happen, and yet there's that little spark, that little part of you that says, but man, can you imagine if it did? Just a little spark of hope. And then David goes through these phases after that, and we can learn a lot from it. Right in your notes, the very first phase is, I allow my circumstances to control me. So here's what happens to David. Little spark of hope. Maybe, never. Oh, but you know. And Samuel leaves. And I'm sure he's sort of wondering, how's my life going to be different? Are there any signs? Is there any chance that this guy, this old prophet is correct? And he's watching and he's looking. And it's just the same thing for David. He's tending the sheep. He has a normal family, same old house. We put ourselves into the story for a moment. You have a little spark of hope for something. But it's the same old car, it's the same old job, it's the same old husband or wife, it's the same old house, it's the same old bills, and you're thinking, wait a second, how come nothing's changing? And that's the first thing about David, nothing changes at all. His circumstances stay the same. He's still cleaning up after the sheep. He's still the youngest in his family, and time goes by, and time goes by. So if you have a spark, isn't it then that it starts to go just a little dimmer? You're like, that's just like I thought. Crackpot, no chance. Nothing's changing in my life. It's so hard to wait. I mean, nobody ever gets up in the morning and says, I hope I get to go to the DMV today. Just difficult to wait, 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 wait. Nothing changes, and that's David. Now, the famous story, when he takes on Goliath, his dad has sent him with some supplies for his brothers. David is not a soldier. David's more of a musician. He writes famous songs. He wrote the song, Yea, though I walk through the valley of death, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. He's a musician. Now, we all know we don't send musicians to go fight battles. Those tight jeans and slick back hair, that ain't get you very far. I've met some tough musicians, but David's a musician, and he shows up, and he's a little spark of hope, and he's been waiting and waiting, and here's what happens when I wait, and the circumstances don't change. I start to doubt. So when you hear the story about David, and he fights Goliath, just know that the young man shows up doubting. Nothing's changing in my life, and he gets there, and there is this huge event that's about to occur. There is a giant, and he's mocking the Israelites, and David does get this like spark of inspiration. Wait a second, that is not cool, man. You're not going to say that about my people or my God, nothing. And he does run towards the giant with a little sling, and just like one shot hits him in the head, and the giant falls down dead. That all occurred. And all of a sudden, remember, he has a little spark of hope. No circumstances change. All of a sudden, David goes from a nobody that's doubting to a somebody that's a national hero. Circumstances can change that quickly. All of a sudden, he goes from like this is never going to happen. And then put yourself in the story. What's it like for you when circumstances start to change and you've said this to yourself, man, things are really starting to come together. The mortgage company called and said, we got the loan. I got the promotion at work. She said, yes, she'll go on a date with me. I told my kids to clean their room, and they did. You know, what's it like for you? You've gone through an illness and you start to feel better. Someone in your family struggles with something and they get through it. And we've all done it. We stand back and we go, this is awesome. I think this is coming together. That's David. He's like, the prophet was right. This is incredible. Everything is coming. I never knew it was going to be like this. It's all working. The king gives him this big position in the army and even says, I'm going to let you marry my daughter. And I'm sure David thought, this is how it's going to happen. I mean, now I'm in the royal family. Look in your notes. Look in your notes what it says. Whatever mission Saul sent him on, the king, David was so successful that Saul gave him a high rank in the army. This pleased all the troops and Saul's officers as well. So when I put myself in the story, it's the time in life that I was doubting, and then all of a sudden some things change, and it seems like everything's coming together. Because circumstances, they can cause me to doubt, or they can cause me to hope. A bit of a roller coaster at times. And David's now the beneficiary of some great circumstances, and maybe you are too. You're like, this is all going to work out now, man. So now you're high. When David's in the army and he's in the royal family and everything's going great. And then he starts to notice, though, that the king doesn't invite him to some of the special occasions. And he starts to feel sort of a cold shoulder from the king. And he's just so sure that the king sort of has a sneer and a suspicious look on his face. And David isn't getting included in anything. And all the people that hang around the king start to not talk to David. And maybe you've been there too, where just everything seemed like it was coming together. And then all of a sudden you say this to yourself, what happened? Everything looked so great. I mean, now the boss never talks to me. The girl doesn't text me back. They defriended me from Facebook. Well, what happened? It was going so good. This will be on the screen. It's not in your notes, but let me read you something from the Bible of the story. But something had happened when the victorious Israel army was returning home after David had killed Goliath. Women came out from all the towns along the way to celebrate and to cheer for King Saul and were singing and dancing with joy with tambourines and cymbals. However, this was their song. Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. Of course, Saul was very angry. What's this? He said to himself. They credit David with 10,000s and me with only thousands. Next, they'll be making him their king. So from that time on, King Saul kept a jealous watch on David. Uh-oh. Now the circumstances have changed again. So all of a sudden, you're hopeful. It's like everything's coming together. And then you haven't done anything, and the circumstances change again. And you're like, now what am I supposed to do? What's next? And we can go there too. Do you know, and this is kind of something you can jot in your notes, when my hope is tied to my circumstances, my hope goes up and down and up and down. Sometimes I'm on top of the world, and sometimes it seems like the world's on top of me. Because my circumstances is driving my hope, which is not a bad thing, but it can be a roller coaster. And David has this moment. Somewhere along the line, like me, God sort of moves off the radar and all the circumstances are overwhelming him. And he has this moment. The king's son, who's Jonathan, friend of David, comes to him and says, listen, man, my dad is crazy to kill you. You better run. And David has a choice to make. Does he stay and trust God, or does he run? And he does what so many of us can do. He scrams. He bolts. He says, I got to get away from this thing, get some space, and get my head together and figure out what I'm going to do. And here's what he comes up with, right? Number two in your notes. It's when I try harder to control my circumstances. David has this moment where he has an opportunity, but he decides, I'm out of here. And he ends up in this little town called Nob. And he goes to the priest in the town, and he starts to tell the priest this big whopper of a story. And I don't know what it is about running or moving away from a place of trust in my life, but it always causes me to cut corners. And one of them for David, he starts lying. He tells the priest, I'm on a secret mission for the king. And I had to leave so fast, I didn't even get a chance to bring any food with me. Do you have any food you can give me? Look at this boy now, he's lying in church. And the priest, this is David, I'll give you some food. And then he tells the priest, he says, and I had to leave so fast, I didn't even have a chance to grab my sword. I'm not packing. I need a weapon. And listen to what the priest tells him. The priest replied, the sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom you killed in the valley of Elah, is here. It's wrapped in the cloth behind the ephod. If you want it, take it. There is no sword here but that one. And David said, there is none like it. Give it to me. Now here's a little interesting part of the story. David's on the run. I've got to figure this thing out. I'm going to have to try super hard. And I have noticed something about trying hard. It doesn't bring me closer to God. And now David, like, church is just a place. It's just a building now. And there's this moment that was created, and I want you to catch this, because God will always try to interrupt and draw me back to a place of trust. He'll always try to do that. And so when David says, I need a weapon, the priest said, well, Goliath's sword is here, and a moment is created for David. Just like today, baptism could be for some, a moment is being offered that you can have with God. You're running. You got overwhelmed by your circumstances. You're going to try to double your efforts. And now I want to create a moment for you. And here's the moment. When he hands him that sword, it's a chance for David to remember, how did I actually kill Goliath anyways? Was that really me? Or did God help that happen? I mean, when I was running, I wonder if he had this thought as he goes back. He goes, I remember running towards that giant with my little sling sled. And he's like 8 feet tall with a big sword. And as I'm running toward him, I'm thinking, why am I running towards a giant? And when I let that thing go, I was as shocked as anybody. God must have been in that rock. Maybe today is your sword moment. There's this opportunity for David to go, wait a second. I didn't kill that giant by myself. I remember that day. I remember knowing on the inside that God was going to deliver me and take care of me and give me the strength and the power and the wisdom. I remember that day. The only reason that sword is even in this church is because God came through for me. And the Lord does create those moments. I don't know if you've had one recently where it was just a moment for you to remember, wait a minute, I can trust God. And David misses it. He just grabs the sword and off he plunges into his life. David and his sword instead of David and his God. Man, and I've been there. When you come from a background like mine, it's very easy to double your efforts and just try harder. You come up against a time when your plan doesn't work out. You lose plan A, you lose plan B, C, D, F, G, H, I, J, K, you're on plan X. And you just said, man, if anybody's going to get this done, I'm going to have to get it done myself. I just need to try harder. And here's the problem. It doesn't cause any hope. Because usually when I look at myself and I look at my problem, I'm like, ugh. And yet David misses the moment. And off he runs. One of the reasons we create opportunities for people to get baptized is not to join this church. Don't get baptized to be right with the church. It's not so people can go to heaven someday. It's not to make God like me more. Baptism is a moment. It's an opportunity at any age that you are, wherever you come from in life. It's a moment to stand before God and say, with everything I got, I'm going your direction. I want you. And it's also a moment for God as well to say something to you about your life and his commitment to you. I got baptized when I was 13. I did it because I wanted to please my grandmother, and it meant a lot to her, and there wasn't much going on for me at God at all at that time in my life, and he probably honored it because I loved her, but nothing happened between me and God. And then when I became a Christ follower, I was 20. I wanted to get baptized again, but I was nervous to do it and even ashamed, and I felt like I haven't earned the right to get baptized, and I already got baptized, and I already screwed that one up last time. There's a lot of stuff I have to figure out in my life. I have to be worthy. Now listen, we don't get baptized because we're worthy. We get baptized to celebrate we don't have to be worthy, for God to love us and accept us, empower our lives. It's the time that we get into a baptism tank and we say, I am so glad it's not based on works. If you got baptized before, finally someone just explained to me, if you want to get baptized, God will accept you. And I got baptized again. And if you've been baptized and you were younger in some situation and you're older now and you're like, gosh, I didn't know that. I can get baptized again. Well, sure you can. So we bring all the stuff for you in case you just come to your moment. Now, number three in your notes, trust God in my circumstances. This is really an interesting little story. I mean, David finally comes around and here's how it occurs. Here's what happens. David leaves with his sword and he goes out into the desert, and there's these caves way out there in a canyon. And he's out there and he's running and he's trying to figure out what to do. Some of his guys have come and they're all around him. And Saul now, he's not giving up. He gets 3,000 soldiers and he's chasing David, and he hears he's out in this canyon. He's hiding out in the desert, and so he's tracking him down. David's way back in this cave with just a couple close friends, trying to figure out, what are we going to do? They're going to catch us eventually. And all of a sudden, they hear a sound. And this is a funny story. Saul's going by with all of his guys. He puts his hands and he goes, hey, everybody stop. I've got to go to the bathroom. And so he goes into the cave. The Bible says he goes into the cave to relieve himself. That's very nice, gentle language before he had to take a leak. And so he goes into the cave, and he's in the cave with his robes down, and David and his men see him, and they're like, shut up. Are you kidding me? And there's Saul dropping a deuce. And the friends of David said, now's your chance. Go kill him. You kill him right now. Take Goliath's sword. Go kill him. You kill him right now, your problems are over. Have you ever had an opportunity arrive in your life because your plan isn't going like you planned it, and you knew that you shouldn't do it, but you just said, if I do that, it's gonna just get me so far ahead. I know it's probably not right, but somehow the ends will have to adjust the means. I mean, if I do it, everything's going to kind of work out. It'll make up. And David's in another moment. Go kill him. Everything. You'll be back on track. And David all of a sudden catches it. He's like, no, man. I don't want to tell my kids that story. I want to tell my grandkids that story. I want them to write songs about the time that David killed Saul when he was dropping a deuce. I don't want that. I'm going to do it God's way. Just in that moment. And he tells Saul, he says to him, and let me read to you what he says to him. Saul gets done and he goes out to the cave and he begins to leave. And this isn't in your notes, but let me just read it. He said to Saul, why do you listen to men when they say, David is bent on harming you? This day you've seen with your own eyes how the Lord delivered me into your hands in the cave. Some urged me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not lay my hands on my Lord, because he's the Lord's anointed. See, my father, look at this piece of your robe in my hand. David snuck up. I don't know how he did it. It must have been awkward. But he snuck up and he cut a little piece of his robe off while Saul was going to the bathroom. So in the Bible, what a story. So anyways, he says, see what I did, my Lord. And then he said, I took a piece of your robe in my hand. I cut off the corner of your robe, but I did not kill you. See that there is nothing in my hand to indicate that I'm guilty of wrongdoing or rebellion. I've not wronged you. But you are hunting me down to take my life. May the Lord judge between you and me. May the Lord avenge the wrongs you have done to me. May the Lord will not touch you. There's an old saying, it goes, from evildoers come evil deeds, so my hand will not touch you. Against whom has the king of Israel come out? Here's where you catch his humility. Are you pursuing a dead dog, a flea? And then this last line, it's in your notes, and we get this huge shift that David finally makes. May the Lord be our judge and decide between us. May he consider my cause and uphold it. May he vindicate me by delivering me from your hand. Life doesn't always go according to plan. I'm overwhelmed by my circumstances. I can try harder and harder. But finally, David decides, I'm going to trust you, God. I'm turning to you, regardless of my circumstances. And it's the bottom line you can write in your notes. Godly hope is better than circumstantial hope. Circumstantial hope is not bad. It just means you go up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. But it's not bad. We're always going to have it. But godly hope is not tied to my circumstances. It's very different than that. Godly hope, regardless of my circumstances, remains. It doesn't matter if I have great circumstances, oh, I've killed the giant, or I have poor circumstances, the king wants to kill me. My hope can remain. And here's why. Look what it says in the Bible. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future. And so my question today is this. What plan are you on? Maybe a long time ago you felt it go off and like, how will I ever get it back on track after all this? And I just want to say to you, that's not the point. At any moment you can turn. At any moment you can say, God, regardless of the circumstances in my life, I am deciding to trust you. On this day, just like David, because life doesn't always go according to plan.